You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcia, a.k.a. Mark Waxson. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 291. On today's show, we're going to talk about Mark Jackson. I'm being joined today by the wonderfully talented Chyna of Posting and Toasting. And in part one of our I Don't Think Mark Jackson Should Be the Knicks Head Coach series, we're going to discuss all the extra stuff around Mark Jackson. Later on this week, I'm going to be bringing in a guest who covers the Warriors to discuss more of the on-court coaching stuff. And there'll be some good there as well as some bad. But today we're going to focus on all the stuff outside of the on-the-court product that I have an issue with when it comes to Mark Jackson that I think makes him a bad candidate. We're going to go through them one by one, including trying to faith heal Steph Curry's ankle, including his reputation of being a pot stirrer and a faction builder wherever he goes. We're going to get into a lot of detail about it, and yeah. And I forgot, most importantly, I'm going to try to play devil's advocate semi-seriously for all these points to try to see other people's point of view, to try to see Mark Jackson's point of view. But at the end, I think you'll find that it's all just too much when taken in aggregate for me to want him to be the New York Knicks head coach. All right, without any further ado, let's bring in Chyna. Let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So we're here to talk about Mark Jackson, the coaching candidate for the New York Knicks. I think it's fair to say that, Chyna, you and I, neither one of us wants Mark Jackson to coach the Knicks.
I think we can go with that. You can take that to the bank.
Okay. So that being said, there are like two big buckets of reasons for why I don't think Mark Jackson is the right fit. One of them is some X's and O's stuff, like, you know, the nitty gritty coaching stuff.
Oh, you like basketball things?
Yeah, basketball things.
Is there a reason why these people are here doing something?
Yeah, it's actually to play this sport where guys run back and forth, women
do it
too.
Man, I'm coming at this all wrong.
Yeah. I think the stronger case for Jackson would even lie in his basketball acumen such as it is. Although I still have issues with that. But we're not here to talk about that today.
No. I mean, he's obviously a competent coach, whatever.
He's got some pluses and minuses there. You know, it's not usually so black and white, which is like, nothing he did was ever right. Like, that would be ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, look. I mean, he's no, like, Woody. He doesn't have, like, a record like that, but, you know.
Are you saying he's a Woody? Is Woody infallible to you or completely fallible?
No, I'm saying he's not even Mike Woodson.
Okay. Oh, still not sure exactly what you mean, but we can keep going.
I'm saying record-wise, if you're looking at, you know.
Right. Just wanted to leave like a nice, long, awkward pause there.
That's the great thing about editing.
Yeah, you know. So there's all the coaching stuff, but then one of the big problems with Mark Jackson is, like, there's just all this extra shit.
Exactly. He's extra.
He's extra. I mean,
yeah.
Like, I kind of have some closing thoughts on this once we get through everything, but I want to go through.
Run it down right now.
I want to go through all the extra stuff in this episode with you. So what we're gonna do is go like point by point through some of his greatest hits.
All right.
Of his extracurricular stuff.
Greatest misses.
Yeah, greatest misses. Chyna's going to help us, like, walk us through, like, what we're talking about. I'm going to share my thoughts, too, but then I'm going to try to play devil's advocate for Mark Jackson for each one, just to try to, like, see his side of things. Okay?
Okay.
All right?
Good luck.
Yeah, I know.
No, that's a very good way of handling things.
It's an exercise in empathy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Empathy is good, and it also allows you to understand everything, so you have a more holistic view of the situation.
That being said, let's start with Mark Jackson's attempt to faith heal Steph Curry's ankle. Let's start there.
Like, why should we not?
Yeah.
So, okay,
so what happened
here? Here's the thing. A long time ago, Steph Curry had a problem with his right ankle when he was first coming into the league. And funny enough, he still does. So
spoiler alert, he did not permanently faith heal Steph Curry's ankle.
No. It's probably some completely different issue that's just the same ankle. Where's your faith? So Curry, the second time, I believe this is, that he sprained this same right ankle. So we're already in the danger zone, right?
Uh-huh.
A couple of days afterward, Mark Jackson has his own church. And he doesn't have his own church like he goes to church, and he doesn't have his own church like he's the pastor in somebody else's church. He is the pastor and the church and the motivation behind it and all that kind of stuff. So,
during the season? Does church just go on hiatus?
I have wondered this. Now, his wife was the co-pastor, co-pastoress. But they're getting divorced, have gotten divorced. So there are a lot of things that are unclear about this situation. Maybe it's in flux. Maybe during the season they have I don't know.
But
it's also got a great name, like the Universal Love Life Charity Church or something that sounds a little bit too much like the Moonies. So he's sprained his ankle. And a couple of days after that, Steph is at the church. And Mark Jackson and all of them and his congregation, they go ahead and they put oil on his leg. It's not holy oil, I don't think. I mean, I don't know what the definition of holy oil would be exactly. Like,
okay.
Who decides whether oil is holy? I don't know. But anyway, they tried to heal it with oil. They anointed it. They prayed over him.
Sure.
And then they decided that he was healed. Then to prove that he was healed, he had to hop around on it and be charismatic on his 2-day-old sprained ankle.
Yeah, it was. That was the best part. Like, if you've ever sprained your ankle seriously, like, you need crutches
crazy.
Sometimes. Like, your whole foot is blue. It gets pretty gnarly.
If your ankle is like... Oh, whoa. And now I've got a... I hate autoplay. Anyway, yeah, so if your ankle is worth the entire franchise, it's also just think about that, you know? And so I think that this is important. Oh, so and Curry talked briefly about how he sort of felt pressured to demonstrate that he felt the power of the Lord and the healing and the oil on his ankle.
Yeah, I like that part of the story because he was like, yeah, they oiled me up and I was good with that. Like, I'm into this, I pray. He's like, and I was going to go sit down, and then I think it was Mark Jackson's wife was like, get back up here! What are you doing?
Show us how the Lord has helped you!
Yeah.
Yeah. And I this is the thing that's tough about the Mark Jackson religious stuff, right? Which is, I'm not personally a very religious person, but that's irrelevant. It's okay to be super religious. That's great. Do your thing, right? And this is kind of my bigger Mark Jackson point, if I can give like a preview, is that it's not that he's a bad person, necessarily. I don't know him. It's not that I disagree with that much of what he does, necessarily, because that's not necessarily important. I'm not going to be hanging out with him. But I don't think that who he is and who he's shown himself to be would make him successful in the Knicks position. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As the coach of the Knicks. Whether or not he might be great somewhere else, I don't know. But I don't think as the Knicks coach, this is what we want. You know? So... I'm willing to even, like, throw all the, like, I don't like this stuff about him out the window and just say it doesn't matter whether I like it or not. It's still a bad fit, you know?
Yeah, I have a hard time being – I'm not the oldest person in the world, but I'm 35.
Oh, my God. Can you still walk?
Barely. Every day is an exercise in, like, trying to not think about my incoming death. But, like, I've seen enough cycles – of, like, this kind of thing. And by this kind of thing, I mean, like, someone with a history of all this shit outside of work and inside of work and these personality struggles, and they don't go away. Like,
no.
He's not going to change. If there's one thing The Sopranos has taught us, it's that people reveal themselves to be who they are very early, and they might get a little bit better, or they might get a little bit worse, and you're sitting there the whole time being like, maybe Tony's not like a terrible sociopath, but at the end it's like, no, he is, and now he's dead. And Mark Jackson has not shown himself necessarily to be like you said, a horrible monster, but all this shit, all these distractions, it never ends well, and you can bet there's going to be some of it that crops up when the Knicks need it least, and it's going to be unwelcome, and it's going to screw with them in a way that's detrimental to the team, and it's just not necessary. That being said, devil's advocate here. Devil's advocate.
Right. Okay.
I'm Mark Jackson, and I really believe in this stuff. I think I can heal my franchise player by anointing his ankle with holy water.
I thought you were going to go with this. This is great.
Yeah. Like, I really believe this. I believe this. I think I can heal him. I'm worried about his ankle. I know that my boy Steph is religious too. He believes in it. I don't think he feels pressured at all. I think he didn't know that I was going to ask him to jump around.
But isn't this even worse then, if you genuinely believe it? Because then, like, he's really going to, like, want you to do it.
That's the thing. I mean, here...
If this is really his genuine belief, then... You're totally screwed, right?
I mean, it's complicated because on one level, I don't trust...
He's a coach.
I really have a problem when people's religious beliefs get in the way of, like, medicine.
Yeah, I mean, it's as I tried to point out, think about, like, Kristaps Porzingis.
It's like anti-vaxxers. Sorry to cut you off for a second, but, like, that kind of thing infuriates me, which is a little... I feel complicated about it because there is this
Mark
strand...
Mark Jackson is an anti-vaxxer. Let's say it right now.
There is a strand in there of... I do think, like, the, you know, big pharma is, like, completely problematic, and there is a lot of shit you can do with, like...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Roots and plants
many, many,
and all this
many
stuff.
Problems. I am, you know. Look, I go to acupuncture. I'm all about it.
There's a whole big mess there, so...
That said.
I just don't want... I don't want Mark Jackson doing this or pressuring someone into doing something like this, you know?
Think about Kristaps Porzingis. Think about his ACL. How would you feel if 2 days post ACL tear, he was getting it anointed with oil and having to jump up and down on it?
Right. So if this
messes his knee up,
right,
then what do you do? I mean, and we don't know that this permanently messed Steph Curry's ankle up. I mean, we know that he's still having problems with it. We have to imagine that not taking proper care of it at that point might have been a problem.
Probably didn't help.
But it didn't help. Yeah. So I don't... Again, so, you know, the religious stuff is a problem, but more of a problem is that if the religious stuff leads you to do things that might not be salubrious for the team,
right,
let's say.
And just to wrap up this one topic, if you believe in this kind of thing, I mean, look, the mind is very mysterious. We don't know exactly how it works. You know, I don't know, whatever. Like, I'm not saying you're an idiot for believing in it, but I am here and paid to share my opinion. I do not believe in it, and I don't want someone forcing that on one of the Knicks. So.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that the mind can heal. I'm not sure that ligaments are one of them.
I don't agree with that either. So let's move on to this one. Let's move on to our next topic. I'm just going to read the headline. Imagine this headline comes out, you know, a month into Mark Jackson's tenure as Knicks head coach. Mark Jackson, the target of extortion by ex-stripper who had nude photographs of the Warriors coach. So let's talk about this situation. I don't think we need to spend too much time on it, but let's talk about it. What happened here, Gina?
So this is before he, I guess, became a pastor. I believe after this he found Jesus, if I get my timeline right here.
All right.
I might have something to say about that, but that's another story. So he had an affair. He cheated on his wife with a stripper who he met when he was playing for the Nets. So she's a New Yorker. Big up. Or maybe she's a New Jersey, and maybe they were the New Jersey Nets back. Anyway, so he had an affair with this stripper. He sent her a bunch of dick pics, I guess, as men are wont to do. What is up with that, guys? Seriously. Anyway.
I can't defend it. but there is something in our DNA that makes us want to do it. I don't know what it is.
Just never unsolicited.
Never unsolicited. Never.
Okay. So, yeah. Moving on.
Let's be clear. Obama voice.
So she had these pics, you know, and then I guess the affair ended, and then he was approached by an associate of hers, saying with an envelope filled with pictures, saying, "Hey, give me some money," because you know it's actually a little bit sad. She like wanted to get like dentistry or something. She needed like a bridge, something like that. And so they wanted money.
Yeah.
And so I guess they asked for like $2,000, $3,000. Inexplicably, Mark Jackson gave them $5,000. I guess he was feeling generous. Uh-huh. But then this associate of the stripper he had the affair with approached him again and said, "Okay, we want more money," which, like, newsflash, if anybody's ever extorting you, that's what's going to happen. Yeah. You're not just going to get extorted once. So
you talk like someone who's been extorted.
No, I've just seen a lot of TV. So he got, you know, the guy comes back and says, "We want more money." And at this point, Mark Jackson was like, "No." And he's like, "No, now we're going to tell your wife that you had this affair with this stripper." And he's like, "You know, I dare you." And then they did. But then apparently that worked out okay, because then he found Jesus and he and his wife founded a church together. But he also called the FBI, who then did like a little dragnet and caught this stripper and her associate. However, she did not go to jail. She worked out a plea with him that meant that it wouldn't go to trial, which meant that the dick pics would never be released publicly. But the associate did, in fact, go to jail.
All right.
So there we go.
Are you ready for my devil's advocate?
My point about this is, I mean, it's a terrible story. It's stupid. It's just the kind of thing that tabloids will make hay out of. I mean, you know, I don't care that he sleeps with strippers or cheats on his wife, but, you know.
All right. So, I mean, that's my real opinion is, like, he just, you know, it shows poor judgment, I think, when you're a public figure.
It does.
To, you know, I haven't met this person, but, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to backtrack what I was about to say. But, like, it just shows poor judgment for someone who's in a public position.
Look, it's not ideal.
It's not ideal. It's a distraction. Devil's advocate. Look, I'm a human being. I was horny. I've been with the same person for, like, 15 years. I'm on the road. I'm lonely. I made a mistake, you know?
Look.
I'm not a bad person.
Everyone in the NBA cheats.
The dick pics were consensual.
We all know that everyone in the NBA cheats. This is a fact. This is not something that we have to pussyfoot around, right? So
everyone except for Andrei Kirilenko.
Right, and Steph Curry, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, but Tristan Thompson, however. It's not a big deal, but think about New York. Think about the Daily News. Think about the New York Post. Think about, to a certain degree, like Newsday and bloggers and, you know, media takeout and all that kind of stuff. They're going to be following him around to a certain degree. Not always. I mean, he's not, you know, a Kardashian, but people know who Mark Jackson is. They will recognize him not only from, you know, TV celebrity, but now he's the coach of the Knicks, and they're going to be looking out for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he can't be on the DL anymore. And they're going to be, you know, I don't like to bring up the Derek Fisher stuff, but, you know, it was, we have to remember, like, Derek Fisher literally missed part of preseason because he and...
Yeah, just, were, it like, gets messy. It gets on. Messy. Like,
I mean, that affects
guilty,
me.
Not guilty, whatever. Like, the kind of, you know. And, yeah, I mean, the more than the affair, I think the dick pics are just really stupid. Like, what are you thinking? Oh, like, you're you know, I know what you're thinking, but, like, what are you thinking?
I want to think back. I think this is, like, 2006 or something. So we have to think about the dick pic technology. Did he, like, take a digital picture and transfer it to his computer
and mail it over?
Yeah. There's a lot of questions here.
Before we move on, which I think we must, my favorite detail from this whole thing was the stripper's, like, extortionist partner, the guy who was, like, running the whole scheme or whatever. He was emailing Mark Jackson from an email account that was 10commandment7@gmail.com. I'm guessing don't cover your neighbor's wife is the seventh one.
Oh, that's smart.
But, like, he didn't even do 10commandments7. Like, that was taken. 10commandments7@gmail.com.
Well, it's like, you know, 2 Corinthians. Ten Commandment, 7.
it kind of sounds like a fire R&B group from the 90s. Like,
well, it also dovetails nicely with this, speaking of paying off people in the adult industry, for the Stormy Daniels thug, the email address we're supposed to send things to is idthethug@gmail.com.
I need to one day like cull together a list of extortionist email addresses and power rank them. Oh my god, that's so good. Okay.
So yeah, so you know, it's. I mean, that's just the kind of salacious stuff that New York tabloids thrive on, and it's the kind of thing that can have a material effect on the team, but cause a lot of distractions at the beginning of the year. We're not saying he's going to do it again.
Right,
you know, he's got Jesus now.
There are just
maybe
there
he's
are
not
the
best judgment.
With a lot of these Mark Jackson things, it's like you look at them individually. You're like, all right, whatever. But like, there are people who don't have these things on their record who
right,
could like
exactly.
probably do a pretty good job. Like,
there
why can't we just
coaches.
Pick one of those people? You know,
there are other coaches out there
who haven't. Yeah. So I want to talk about Mark Jackson stirring the pot in Utah.
Yes.
But before we do that, I just want to remind our listeners that you guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire multiverse. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, let's talk about Mark Jackson stirring the pot in Utah.
Yeah.
When he was a player there.
Yeah. So he got traded to Utah. And I think it's worth noting that in his career, he got traded like 9 or so times. So
right.
he's been around. He was not somebody who they kept around.
And someone who was quite talented and was traded.
Yes. Yes. I mean, he's a great player. He was a great player. Like, I don't want to, like, you know, taint the guy's legacy. I just don't want to be my fucking coach. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
No, of course.
No,
but I'm saying it just that definitely makes it
yeah.
worse when someone clearly brings
yeah.
a lot to the table on the court.
But nobody wanted him. Yeah.
yeah.
So, yeah, so he gets to Utah, and John Stockton's there, you know, all-time Utah great. And I don't know what his beef was, but he takes it into his mind. And this is sort of a theme that goes throughout things. He takes this into his mind that he wants to, like, John Stockton's taking playing time from him, that he needs to be the top dog there, he wants to be the point guard with the mostest. And so he starts undermining John Stockton. He starts telling different players that, like, Stockton's the reason why they're not getting the ball enough. And he starts kind of setting up factions. He's real into, like, factions. He turns people against each other. But, again, I don't know him. This is what people say.
Yes, these are all, you know, these are reports, but they're all sourced by people who were there. And like anything, you never know
100%. A lot of these actually have names attached to them. It's
yeah.
not
oh,
just
yeah, yeah,
anonymous.
Yeah.
But so he starts just, you know, a lot of us against them in the locker room are these. So there's like the new guard versus the old guard in the Jazz locker room, all trying to, you know, mess with Stockton? That's a new player. With Stockton's sort of, you know, control over the locker room, because he was obviously, you know, the team captain and like the eminence grease of the Jazz at that point. And that's a bullshit move. Your dude is just there. You know, that's not what you do.
Like, I read some of the stuff about this, you know, this incident, and he was questioned about it, and he was like, well, that's just me being a leader. Like, I'm leading. You know, maybe you've never met a leader. And if you're a leader, you could talk to Stockton about it. You could talk to Sloan about it. You don't create these survivor-esque, you know, like spheres of influence where like you're going through back channels. And the funniest part about this to me was, all right, John Stockton was 40 years old. Maybe it was time for him to go. Mark Jackson was 38 when this was happening.
I know.
He was 38. He's not like a 19-year-old. He's a grown-ass man, like an old man. Like, I feel old at 35. He's 38, running around being like, Stockton doesn't respect you, trying to like, what? What are you trying to do, you know?
I mean, he's a grown-up. He should not be doing that.
And I don't know the full story, but that's an old guy doing, like, weird, petty shit. And so that's not great. But devil's advocate.
Without Malone around, who cares about Stockton?
Here's my devil's advocate. Okay. Fuck John Stockton. He's a little dick. He, you know, John Stockton is the worst thing is all the worst things about America. He's like, oh, I'm a clean-cut white boy with, like, short shorts and, like, a nice little hairdo. Meanwhile, he's throwing elbows, John Stockton. He's dirty.
Oh, yeah, dirty.
He's dropping napalm on kids in Vietnam. Like, that's John Stockton, you know what I mean? But he's got a nice crew cut. He's got a mean fade, and he ties his tie all tight, and you love him.
And he put Gonzaga on the college map forever.
Is that a bad thing?
I don't know. I guess I don't care. Either way.
Just throwing out Stockton info. No, yeah. But yeah, I don't really believe
actually,
that.
But... I have family in Utah. I'm not against John Stockton,
oh,
to be honest.
Yeah. No, he seems like a dick. Him and Hornacek. Sloan kind of seems like a dick too, but it still doesn't
I just
sit
don't
right.
think, I think he liked the haircut. It's what? That
yeah.
white guy, straight hair haircut.
It's such a, yeah. Stockton is just like a... Who's that guy who does the bullshit Americana paintings of, like, the kid in the ice cream parlor?
Norman Rockwell?
Yeah, he's like a Norman Rockwell wet dream stock.
Now, here's something interesting. I used to feel exactly that way about Norman Rockwell, who, by the way, was born a block away from me. Where I am standing right now, sitting
in the epicenter of privilege.
There he is, the Upper West Side, land of Ron Baker. But he's actually... way more interesting than you think.
Is that so?
Take a look at some of his more like interesting and socially active and commentary on America type paintings, and he is mad interesting. Take a look somewhere.
Right.
I swear, because I used to hate him, but if you go with like Thomas Kinkade, like Painter of Light or something like that, I'm totally with you. But, is that?
I think Kinkade is a dyed in the wool like InfoWars believer.
Is that John Stockton's son who's playing on the Jazz now? By the way.
I believe so, yes.
How did they manage that?
How did they manage to...
get his son on the Jazz? Like, did they just, like, was he not drafted? Did they just pick him up? I mean...
I think so. I think he's a little mascot.
Okay, so it's like a Christmas situation. Cool.
Yeah. So moving on from the stirring the pot in Utah.
Right.
Let's get to some of the meat of, like, the recent Mark Jackson stuff.
Well, he stirred the pot everywhere.
He's
I mean,
a pot stirrer. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the straw that stirs the pot. he's the ladle that stirs the pot, you know?
Exactly. This ladle that broke the camel's back?
Yes. That's a flawless, adaption of that phrase.
Makes perfect sense.
How about some of the things that Warriors owner Joe Lacob? How you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Had to say about Mark Jackson upon firing him.
Yeah, well, I mean, and here's the thing, is that we, Knicks fans particularly, perhaps, but East Coasters, something, we might have our issues with the Warriors management. I mean, they are a bunch of fucking tech bros, and they're proud of it, you know? So
sure.
I want to give a little moment of credence to the idea that we are talking about very different cultures here. The kind of Bay Area ultra white tech bro kind of insensitive to some things kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Mark Jackson being somebody who has a very different kind of set of experiences and outlook on the world maybe than those people would.
Yeah. And continue on that point, Mike Vorkunov did a really good podcast the other day. With I forget the guy's name, so my bad there. But someone who's like covered the Warriors for years, and he does talk about. It's a very interesting podcast. You should listen to it after you listen to this one. But he talks about, you know, I will say there's something to the idea, even though I still don't think it's great the way that Mark Jackson acted. That he's like, hey, like I'm Mark Jackson. You know, I played in this league for 17 years. These guys all listen to me. Like, who the fuck are you, Joe Lacob? Like, what do you know about basketball that you're going to tell me anything about, like, what I need to do? I don't think that is the right approach, but I do think it does, to, like, get into my devil's advocate early, I can, like, see where he's coming from, at least. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for example, if you had... who's like an amazing coach. If you had Greg Popovich suddenly become the Knicks coach, which hilarious, right?
yeah.
You would certainly if he was having culture clashes with Dolan, you would want him to push back and be like, no, motherfucker, you need to listen to me.
Yeah.
Like, this is how things work in basketball. I don't care about your money. I don't care about your cable vision. I don't care about JD in the straight shot. Like, this is basketball and this is how we do it, right?
Yeah.
So and that was what you would want. So I can see what you're saying there. You know, but on the other hand.
Let's get to the but.
I mean, look, these are your bosses. This is a job, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're in open rebellion against your bosses. So like Lacob said about him, he said, part of it was that he didn't get along with anybody else in the organization, is something he said after firing him. Mm-hmm. And look, he did a great job, and I'll always compliment him in many respects, but you can't have 200 people in the organization not like you.
Right.
And I think that kind of gets to the heart of it. He tended to, turn people against each other and not know who the appropriate people to have on his side were. And that can be something that's useful if mm-hmm. you're trying to do the right... I mean, no, like you're saying, you know, I mean, maybe he knows more about basketball, whatever. But part of being a coach, part of this job is not just knowing basketball. It's being able to manage between management and the players, be that buffer between them. It's also to like create a good culture where everybody feels good about things. It's a big job, and they get paid millions and millions of dollars now. So it makes sense that they have a lot of responsibility in these things, you know? And he was miserable at that aspect. The owners clearly hated him. I mean, there's multiple quotes along these lines of like, you know, and when I say as a whole, I don't mean just the team and just the 15 players and all the coaching staff. I mean, everybody. There's 200 players here.
And like,
200
you know,
employees here, sorry.
Tech bros can be obnoxious in their like, we're going to disrupt everything, blah, blah, blah. But there's nothing wrong with bringing in, as long as they empower Mark Jackson to make decisions, there's nothing wrong with bringing in like more information, you know, like building out your team. Like one of the stories is they said they're like, we want to give you the like hire a couple more assistants. Like here's all the money in the world. Like bring someone in. And he was like, no, I already have the best staff in the world.
Which I'm going to now undermine.
And which he then like did all this weird shit to. Like he sent Brian Scalabrine to the G League.
Who messes with Brian Scalabrine? Come on.
And like, okay, maybe Brian Scalabrine's a dick. I don't really know what happened there, but like, you refused to hire new coaches because you were like, I have the best staff. And then you went to war with everyone on your staff.
Yeah. And it looks to me like what happened with his assistant coaching situation is he just... I think he's... If I can armchair psychoanalyze somebody who I've never met.
Yeah.
And in fact, never watched an entire interview with. So...
important caveat.
But have read a whole lot of bad things about in researching this. So I have a very impartial view of this. He seems to be afraid of having his power and his control challenged. So with the things, you know, he wants to run things. He doesn't want the owner to tell him how to do things, which, you know, makes sense. You have to, well, I mean, the manager. Anyway, and he also wants to hire his assistant coaches, but he doesn't want his assistant coaches to challenge him. He doesn't want to give them too much power. He doesn't want to see them coming over the horizon and people who might be undermining him, getting closer to the players than he is, doing that kind of thing. So he was all very much about like keeping power concentrated with him. But, and I think, again, that's a terrible fucking combination with the New York Knicks.
Yeah, and I just think, I mean... Like, look, I guarantee that, like, assistants are grimy and try to do shit to get head coaches fired and get, like, I'm sure that happens. But if you're taking care of your shit, like, you shouldn't need to resort to these, like, weird Machiavellian
Trumpian
tactics to, I mean, look what's going on in Golden State. Like, clearly, they don't have an agenda. I mean, they're kind of obnoxious with their light years commentary and blah, blah, blah. Ugh. But like they want to win. I think that is what's most important to them. And more importantly for me, like the whole history of like the good parts of human civilization are are people collaborating to come up with things. It's never like one person. Like, Edison is a bullshit lie. He had like 100 people in his factory like trying all this shit until someone else figured out how to like make a light bulb work. And he's like, oh, well, you're in the Edison factory. That's mine. All this internet.
He's also totally an asshole. That poor elephant.
And all this internet shit is about, like, open code and people sharing and together and the medical and scientific communities. Like, all of human knowledge that's, like, important and meaningful and, like, helps better people's lives. Like, it all comes from people working together. And, like, it's important for a leader to stand up to bullshit when they see it. But, like, bullshit is the Wire's owner being like, you need to hire my nephew. Or, like, you can't hire that guy because he's black. Or, like, you can't hire this woman. And then you're like, no, fuck you. But bullshit is not, like, we want to be on the same page with organizational philosophy. And I want you to understand that I don't think we should shoot so many mid-range twos. You know, like, that's not – you're not, like, MLK standing up to injustice then. Like, and even MLK, like, he had to build a coalition. It wasn't just him, you know, like – you have to get people to buy into what you're doing and to make people like you. Like, it's part of the job.
Right. Yeah, and you know, and part of what the issue seems to be is that he in the locker room, apparently would motivate players by doing that whole playing favoritism kind of thing. Who's on the inside circle with him? Who isn't? Like, so guys wanted to get, like, more in with him. And that's a kind of tactic which might actually work. I mean, as we discussed earlier, you know, dudes like to argue, whatever. But I don't think that that's a good situation for the Knicks. I think that the Knicks have a lot more pressure on them than your average team because of where they are, because of the amount of media they get, because everything that happens in New York just gets magnified. And because they're actually one of the younger teams in the league now. You know, we have a lot of young guys and we want to develop them, and we don't want them to be developed thinking that the way that you succeed in the NBA is being, you know, factionalized and stabbing your teammates in the back.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I want to keep talking about this us versus them stuff, but I want to quickly remind our listeners that you guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to Head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. There's no such thing as 5 tunes. Go to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks.
I really wish they would update 5 tunes.
So, one thing, like, I'm going to get, later on this week, we're going to get more into the X's and O's of Mark Jackson. But I will say, it seems like people think he did do a good job of developing Steph Curry, of developing Klay Thompson. And he was, like, good at gassing them up and being like, you're the best, and, like, no one believes in you, and you're, you know, some of the best shooters of all time. And so, like, that's a positive. But the thing that you read in all these accounts is that it started as, like, the world not believing in you, but then got weirder and more insular, and then it was, like, Dave the equipment guy doesn't think you could do it, and, like, management, and then you started pitting them against management. And when you do that, you're just destined to fail. Like, that's what you can't create these weird inside the organization factions. It's just
And that's the kind of thing that would really thrive in the already completely conspiracy-ridden MSG universe.
Yeah. And then he's just, and then, like, to get back on the extra train, I mean, like, so.
He's so extra.
Joe Lacob.
There goes that man.
Which, like, I love in a person. That's the thing. Like, don't get me wrong. This is a weird tightrope the Knicks have to walk here, because I do want someone who's charismatic and has a little bit of, like, bravado. I think Jeff Hornacek was, like, such a dull, you know, piece of cardboard that you're chewing on. He was, like, a dry piece of falafel. You're like, bleh, get this out of my mouth. But
yeah, I'm having falafel for dinner.
Oh, I hope it's moist. That's my wish for you.
Moist falafel.
But you want someone who has a little bit of a flair, but doesn't have all this extra shit. So that is difficult to find.
Hey, he's no Woody. What can you do?
Yeah, I mean, Fizdale looks like he could be one of these type of people, like, who has a little bit of flair, but isn't, you know, have all this baggage. But, like, he, you know, when Joe Lacob said this stuff, because I think part of what happened was, you know, the first season they won, like, 20 games with him, and then they won, like, 50, and then 50 again, and then they fired him. It was a little bit of a David Blatt situation.
Right.
And people were like, well, why the hell did you fire him? Like, you guys were doing great. And then so he felt compelled, Lacob, to kind of, like, defend himself. And then Mark Jackson, you could defend yourself, fine. But he defended himself, like, while giving a sermon.
Yeah, and you know...
It's like, it's just more weird, bad extra judgment. Like, what?
Again, I'm not the world's foremost authority on religion, but I don't think that's what you're supposed to do. I don't think that, like, you're supposed to get on the pulpit and be like...
Talk to them about their problems, not yours, you know?
Yeah, don't complain about your other job, but it's God is not involved in this.
Like, it's
not your congregation's issue.
I grew up, going to church with my mom. She was really into it. She was important that I go for her. I'm not religious now. But never once were they like, yo, like, Steve in accounting is a complete dick.
Right?
or some weird drama from it. Like, they'll speak in these generalities. And then I've been to a bunch of churches with a bunch of different pastors or whatever. And they talk about, like, issues that people face, but they don't make it, like, so about them. Because ultimately it's about God and Jesus and whatever else, you know.
Just getting up there. Yeah. And using, I mean, and I think that this is sort of a little, another one of these themes that we can run into. I wish we had a little theme ding bell. ding! Is using a public platform to settle some private beefs.
Yeah. Let's talk about
something that he tends to do. Like, so he gets up there in his church and he's like, you know, he's like, yeah, Joe Lacob did this and he said the folks don't like me. And that's tasteless and it's, makes me wonder about Jesus, but whatever. But he also, you know, he's got a big old gig on the TV announcing games.
Yes.
And he has multiple times, and we don't have to go through them, but he's multiple times while announcing games, like, trashed on other people that he's worked with for no particular good reason.
My favorite was the Richard Jefferson one.
Yes. Which is a lie. I mean, he's wrong. He lied about him.
It was the funniest.
To diss him.
Tell the listeners what happened there.
I guess it's a, let's see, here we go. It's game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Toronto Raptors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And so Jeff Van Gundy and Jackson are doing the show, and Jeff says, don't talk about what you need to do to win. Do what you need to do to win. Richard Jefferson, great loose ball play, and has always been a terrific finisher on the break. Right? So he's complimenting him. And then Jackson says, guy's a pro, stays ready, played for me in Golden State. Cost us a series in San Antonio, missing 2 free throws, but I'm not holding on to that.
Uh-huh.
Still has plenty in the tank. That is so extra.
And the best part about this was...
When he didn't lose the series!
He didn't. It was in game 1. The Warriors were up by 8 points in the fourth quarter when he missed these 2 free throws. Like, so my devil's advocate for this, I kind of forgot I was doing that for a little bit. my devil's advocate is like, well, I'm an announcer, I'm trying to be entertaining, I'm trying to be funny, blah, blah, blah. But to go back away from devil's advocate, it's just like, it's not even funny, it's just like annoying. And again, this is my personal opinion, you may not share it. But I don't like his judgment. This is another example of that. Like, I think he doesn't know when to stop.
Bro, look, personally, I'm sick of people getting on TV and, like, just spouting easily disproved lies. I don't need this.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And it also, it shows maybe if we're going to go ding, 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 again, this tendency to see the world as acting upon you, as you being a victim of things.
Right.
There's sort of two kinds of people. There's people who see themselves as the protagonist in their lives and things that happen to them are because of things they've done. And there's people who see themselves as like an external locus of control where things happen to them and they are acted on.
Uh-huh.
And he seems to have that kind of attitude of like, the poor me, this is, you know, it's everyone against me. He lost me this series, you know? And it's like, no, if your memory, if he genuinely believes this and he wasn't just randomly dissing somebody.
Man, he's such a Tony Soprano-esque figure.
Exactly. This so if he were, if crazy. His memory is that this cost him the series, then he's really like, he's got some kind of complex about victimhood that I do not want to be involved with. Because again, the owner of the New York Knicks has a complex about victimhood. Mm-hmm. And I don't think these things go well together.
Let's close out this ep by talking about...
The big one.
The big one. The alleged homophobia.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. All these other things are like, look, people don't like this dude. He seems to, like, create factions. He seems to have a hard time getting along with people, and that's not a great fit. And that's like, you know, that's whatever. Maybe he's a great coach, and that could be something we could get over. Maybe he's changed. But the thing that's really a problem is that back when now his name's going to escape me. Jason Collins was coming out as the first and only gay basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of talk about it, and our friend Mark Jackson said when asked about it, I don't even know what the context was. They were joking around about, like, signing different people, and somebody joked about signing Jason Collins, and apparently Jackson got irritable and immediately was like, not in my locker room.
Right.
He has since denied this.
Yes.
He said that he didn't say this. This wasn't him. It didn't happen. So the initial report was that that happened, and people were understandably really fucking pissed off about it.
I mean, if you said that, that's obviously completely unacceptable. I mean...
Yeah. But...
We don't know for sure, though. We don't know for sure.
There's only... yes, it was according to a source close to the team. This was reported in a San Francisco paper.
So I'm sure whoever reported it would say, yes, my source did say that. Yes, my source had could plausibly be there. But again, if you're not in the room and if you don't hear a recording or whatever, you don't really know for sure. So...
Exactly.
But that was the report from a source.
But then this is what he went on to say to defend himself. He said, I will say this. We live in a country that allows you to be whoever you want to be. As a Christian man, I serve a God that gives you free will to be who you want to be. As a Christian man, I have beliefs of what's right and what's wrong. That being said, I know Jason Collins. I know his family. And I am certainly praying for them at this time.
Right. And I think it's safe to say that he's not praying for them to to deal with all the other horrible homophobes out there.
And he's not praying with him just because he thinks he's awesome and wants the best things for him, because he prays for everybody.
The insinuation is that homosexuality is wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't take much reading between the lines to see exactly what he's saying, which is, my Christianity leads me to believe that homosexuality is wrong, and I am praying for Jason Collins apparently to not be gay anymore. I don't know.
And this was in 2013.
Yeah.
So 5 years ago, he was like 48, roughly. You know, and you're free to agree with him if you want, but I'm free to not be okay with that. And I don't want someone
I'm not going to go that far. I don't think you are free to agree with him.
I mean, look, some people don't have a problem with that. I do. I have a problem with that. And I don't want someone who thinks that way coaching the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can call it what it is. If what he says is an accurate reflection of his beliefs, which is that being gay is wrong because of his Christian beliefs, and that he has, I guess, sympathy for people who are so afflicted, then that's bigotry, you know? It doesn't matter why you're a bigot.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you have heartfelt, honest beliefs that lead you to your bigotry. It is bigotry, and it's not okay. And it's not okay in San Francisco, and it's not okay in New York, you know? I mean, let's think again about where we're talking about playing here.
Yeah.
And we just had Pride Night. The Knicks had their first ever Pride Night this year, and that was really nice because basketball can be tough.
Yeah, I mean, a small gesture, but better than nothing. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, and there are people, you know, if you are a non-straight fan of sports, it can be a really aggressively unpleasant place for you, I think. And New York is a place that is supposed to be tolerant.
Yeah.
And to bring somebody in who is famous for being intolerant about this, who, in addition to this particular incident, I mean, this is the kind of thing that it was not quashed, it didn't go away, but people have continued to talk about this ever since then. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of people coming out and saying, no, man, I know Mark Jackson personally. He loves gay people. He thinks they're great.
I mean,
it doesn't happen.
People change, like, but he said this when he was 48 or whatever we said it was. Like, I grew up in, like, a very, like, conservative Italian-American, like, tri-state area. when I was a kid, like, I did think being gay was wrong. Like, and then I became, like, I went to, like, college, and I was like, huh. You started taking, like, classes, and they're like, the Bible's all bullshit and all this stuff. You know, and I'm like, oh, shit. And I started thinking critically. And then as an adult, I came to completely opposite, you know, opinions on almost every, like, social thing that I believed in. everything, too. I'm a social and fiscal progressive. But like, you know, so for, you know, and, you know, again, do I like think that Mark Jackson is history's greatest monster? No, but no, someone who's walking around in 2013 having these kind of beliefs at 48 years old is just not a kind of guy I want in charge of my team. And I, all these things you can like, I kind of wanted to do this devil's advocate thing as a way to sort of like long form show that you can make an argument against everything, but like, why do we need to hire a coach that has like 15 different things that I got to argue against and explain away?
He's just like, the wrong fit.
There are other options. Like,
he's a bad fit, and he's going to really, really, I mean, it's a real insult to a significant part of the fan base if he gets hired. I mean, I don't want to underplay that.
Yeah.
I mean, you are hiring a homophobe, and you're saying, we don't, you know, maybe he's changed. Give him a chance, guys. And that's not something that you should ask people who are, like, you know, paying hundreds of dollars for your damn tickets to do.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, it's really, really insulting. And I very much hope that either the Knicks management takes a serious time, like, take some time to think about that and think about what message they want to send to the fans and the fact that there are other people, as you pointed out. And if they decide that he is the right person, God forbid, go, you know, that Jackson himself takes some time to address the issue, you know?
Yeah.
It's not enough to just sweep it under the table. It has to be addressed. This is New York City, you know? This is not some place where you can, you know, where we elect homophobic people. That doesn't happen. This is, you know, one of the gay rights capitals of the country, and we're proud of it.
Yeah. Well so, said.
You know.
Well said. No, thank you. I think this is a good point to wrap up the Mark Extra. Mark Jackson is Extra edition of Locked On Knicks. Gina, do you have anything you want to promote?
I don't have anything at all I want to promote other than please don't hire Mark Jackson, Knicks management. It would make me sad, and I love your team.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was great. Always have a great time talking to Gina. I hope you guys are beginning to understand, those of you who have questioned why I do not want Mark Jackson to be the head coach, why I think the way I do about this issue. That's it for today's episode of Locked On Knicks. Thank you so much for listening, even if you still want Mark Jackson to be a head coach. I mean, you're wild for that. But thank you for listening. If you have a moment, rate us on iTunes. 5 stars, please. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Knicks, or at NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. And always salt the pasta water. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace!